League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Well, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to On Screen Live Special, part one of two, coverage of the 62nd annual New York Film Festival. My name is Andrew Jupin, and I'm alongside my two film festival going buds. Here, we're going to bring them in. We're going to review some flicks out of the festival. We're going to plug some stuff. Then we're going to review some more films out of the festival. Then we're going to plug more stuff, as we have been known to do around here. So let's bring them in. First up, you know him, you love him. Love that fucking sick mustache, Mr. Eric Sisko.
Oh, yes. It was sick. I was sick for TIFF, but now it's a healthy stash.
So that's, right, dude.
That's good.
Because you made a deal with a Cenobite. You solved the puzzle box.
That's right.
In exchange for better health to be covering the New York
Thank
Film
you. That's exactly why you might be able to see my nipple clamps through this shirt. Because I made a deal with the Cenobites.
You see. Oh, can you see my little tit tuckers through my t-shirt? we've been seeing some good stuff, man.
Yeah.
It was a bummer to miss you at TIFF. So of course this is a welcome return. Who I did have at TIFF, but he didn't have any literature with him, but I can see in the green room, he's got his nose buried in something. It's Mr. Chris Cabin.
Wait, you have tit tuckers now?
Oh yeah, dude. They got like a chain between them, you know?
Do you have any CDs in you as well? Have any of them come flying off the wall? You know, the old copy of Dookie just hits you right up the duker.
Oh, yeah. I got Dookie in my back pocket. You know, that one.
Sure.
I'm to the live shows this November, and you can, and December, see. You can tug my tits.
Oh, really? We should put that. We should do a new bumpers now, because this is really. Yep. Gonna bring them in. If they get to play with his tits, that's going to be
tastefully.
A tastefully. what do you know our audience?
It's a caresser.
Come on now.
Well, you got to warm me up, Chris. I can't just go right into it.
Okay, we'll make that a special pricing, right. So you can be wined and dined before they play with your tits.
Well, now that this has been demonetized on YouTube, let's talk.
Yeah. Now that the money making opportunity is out of the way, man, you guys were just going. I had something that I was gonna lend to all of this. Something that happened to me.
Tit related, or
it was it wasn't tit was related. It was something about the show, and now I can't. I don't know.
Well,
maybe it was something maybe about the live shows. Something. I don't know.
I could tell a bathroom story while you think.
Go right ahead.
Because this is film festival coverage. We're going to go through everything that happens there.
Okay.
You know, the first big marathon day I was there at the Walter Reed Film Center, or whatever it's called.
Walter Reed Theater for Film Movie and Theater. Lincoln Center. Yes.
And man, this guy was just like, so I went into a stall.
We should say the Walter Reed Theater for Film at Lincoln Center. Some of the worst public bathrooms you will find on Manhattan Island. Just some of the worst layout.
Yeah.
Ill-functioning toilets.
Mm-hmm. Ill-functioning assholes, too. I'll get to it.
All the money went to the Alice Tully renovations. Those bathrooms are miraculous. Those are beautiful, beautiful facilities. Uh-huh. But yeah, they have the same. I've been going to this fucking thing since like the early aughts. Those bathrooms have not changed. They haven't done an upgrade. Yeah. They haven't done anything. That shit has been that way forever.
But we are happy to be invited.
We'll
live like cattle for you because it's a great festival. So this guy comes in. I'm in the stall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he starts taking a leak at the urinal like you would. Uh-huh. But then I hear this this humongous like fart wave. This
What?
It sounded like someone stepped on a whoopee cushion, and it was like I was like, that sounds a little wet. And the guy goes, woohoo!
Yeah.
And then I'm like,
wait, he woohooed after he shit his pants at the urinal?
It sounded like maybe it was involuntary. Like it was like, ooh.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And then I'm like, you got to check that out. You got to come back here, sir, and check that out. And he didn't. He just left and he went back into the theater. And you wonder why it smells in there.
No, that's you got to go in the stall. You need full inspection. That's you know, right. Like, oh, well. And odds are nothing happened. Look, odds are nothing happened. But in the off chance, sir, that you have shit in your pants in public, well, you got to do something about that. You can't be going sitting for another 2-hour movie.
It is unfair to say that the theater, the Walter Reed, smells like shit because it's really a potpourri. Yeah. It is there's BO. BO is actually the one that takes over everything. That and foot smell really do lead the charge. But then you've got the piss and shit. Kind of mingling in there in the back part.
And then you've got guys walking in with a thermos of soup over my soup for the movies.
Here's the thing. We gotta stop it with the hot food in the theater. And like, here's the thing. Like the theater people, you know, the ushers and whoever, they do an amazing job.
Yeah.
They're not miracle workers. They can only do so much. And obviously they're not going to be searching every container. Like that's just not practical. No. You as the theater goer, and we're all adults, you have to think, man, should I open a hot fucking quart of soup in a packed movie theater? The answer, 10 out of 10 times, is absolutely not.
Yes. They should just send someone in there with some Lysol to spray in the air a little bit.
Oh, then and you're like, just going to get people who hate the smell of Lysol. You can't win here, Eric.
No, but look, like,
there
I know.
There is no winning. That's true.
We all, it's a losing game.
Oh, yeah.
We all want to see every movie, right? But you have to allow yourself time to get out, stretch your legs, go get a bite to eat in a regular eating area, and then go back to the movies. You know, so you're not going to catch everything. And like, I'm sorry, just a hot quart of bisque in a cramped theater is rude.
You might as well put down hay on the go to the bathroom wherever you want.
I mean, honestly, I would be more for that at this point. But I mean, as to your point, Eric, these are usually a great deal of the audience for the P&Is are grampy or grampy leaning. So they had that one fucking time in 88 when they went to a P&I and they like someone took their seat, even though they had their thing on it. So now they will never forget that. So now they will every time they will bring like their plantains with hot sauce plus like chicken noodle, the Italian wedding soup, the 5-quarter. They will be doing that all day, and you will smell it for the entire movie.
It's just not fair. It's just not fair, damn it!
Oh, my God. Anyway, so that's part of the background horrors of what we've been going through, which we're very grateful for. Thank you.
Of course.
I will say, so far with this festival, you guys, no old people fights yet. Last year, there was
epic ones.
I witnessed a fucking epic old person fight in one of the theaters. I think the behavior, for the most part, has been much more improved this year.
I would agree. The biggest screening I went to, I assume for you guys as well, was Nickel Boys, and I didn't see a single Roughhousing. Not a one.
I was shocked.
No dispute over seats, nothing. It was actually quite good.
No, and when you get those P&Is too for like the opening night film, like people can be absolute
crazy
maniacs sometimes. So I'm glad that all worked out. Nickel Boys, one of the films we will get to in the lineup today. But first up, I want to talk about one that we caught on our first day, Eric and I did anyway. It's a new one from Miguel Gomez, of course, and it's called Grand Tour.
I actually did not catch it. But
oh, you did not catch it? I thought you did.
No, I was trying to get a separate screener. I couldn't make it that day.
Oh, is that what
it was? I think it's just you, but I'm very interested in this movie. I would love to hear more.
Oh, yeah. No, so that's... all right, well, this discussion will be a little shorter than I thought it was going to be. Miguel Gomez, you know, I hadn't seen a movie of his in a while because I missed Arabian Nights, but I really like Taboo, which played in the festival like 12 years ago or something like that.
A long time ago, yeah.
And if you don't know Miguel Gomez, he's a Portuguese filmmaker. He just makes these like beautiful dreamscape kind of movies, dreamlike kind of feeling movies where like, you know, you're watching a movie. Like, if that makes sense, you can feel the moviness of it all. You can feel the movie making, the excitement for movies. And so this This one is about it's like a journey through East Asia in the early 20th century. And it's kind of funny because the premise is pretty simple. It's a man and a woman who are engaged to be married. They're an English couple, or they're at least they're visiting from England. And it's like 1918 or something like that. And this dude kind of has like, it's the most epic tale of cold feet for an engagement ever. He kind of just like takes off in the middle of Southeast Asia and leaves this woman to go on his own journey of chugging Singapore slings and walking through various forests and going, you know, town to town, whether by train or whatever. But the funny thing is, she is following him stop to stop, trying to find him in this sort of like airheaded, you know, notion of like, well, he's just a little ahead of me. Like, he's clearly not trying to abandon me. He still loves me and wants to get married.
How does she follow him? Does she like smell the colonization in the air? I think he's that way.
That was Taboo, actually. I don't know if it's the same. That was essentially the central tenet of Taboo.
Oh, actually. Nice.
It's just, she kind of just like shows up, and there's like, you know, there's some letters given here and there, but it's pretty cool because most of that action in the early 20th century is black and white, and he kind of just plays with time in this cool way. Time is sort of irrelevant to the story. He cuts to all these like really awesome color shots of the same areas just further along in time, closer to the present time, sometimes seemingly right up to the present time. And it just is like this hypnotic, beautiful ride through cinema in a really cool way. And it's over 2 hours. Fellas, I'll tell you right now, I didn't feel a minute of it.
Nice.
I was totally just like entranced by this movie. And I was so happy right at the start. My fucking fave film company going right now, I think, you guys. Mubi, it's another one in their hands. So I don't know the deal with this release. It's a TBD. I don't know if it's later this year. I don't know if it's maybe early next year or what the deal is. But it is just, you know, I think the copy on Lincoln Center's website uses the word fanciful. And I think that it is a fanciful trip through a movie. Hmm. So I really cannot recommend it enough. That's so funny. This is what happens, folks. Like, all of the screenings kind of just meld into like one event. And I was like, yeah, Eric was definitely sitting next to me. I think, by the way, a friend of the show, Sean Weiner, who's been attending on behalf of his organization, UFO Untitled Filmmaker Organization, I think he was actually sitting next to me. I remember we got lunch afterwards and he also really liked it. So there's nice. Two recommendations from the WHM universe, so to speak.
It sounds good. It sounds great. I really wanted to see it. There was some train delay stuff that happened that kind of prohibited that. But I reached out to the press contacts and it turns out I don't carry much weight. Just on my body.
Well, I'm sure they're being like insanely inundated.
Oh yeah,
with similar requests like that. So who the heck knows?
This will be. You'll get stuff for the like when For Your Consideration stuff starts going out. This will absolutely be on some list. I guarantee you that. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it was this. If it's 2024 or 2025 release, I kind of feel like it is like a late 2024 release, and it's going to be at the Eleanor Burnham Theater. I think it might be one of their releases. But Miguel Gomez has been at this fucking festival forever, like not like 2 or 3 years ago. I think, I forget if Andrew, you saw it. He co-directed a movie called the Tsugwa Diaries. It's August Backwards.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yes. Yeah. That movie.
Great movie.
Mwah, gorgeous primo movie. Stuff. Primo yeah, yeah. stuff.
He's been around. Whenever he's around, they usually get him, and he's been kind of Taboo, he's been doing stuff since before Taboo that's really great. Yeah. Since Taboo, he's kind of been on everybody's radar, and like, it's been great so far.
Taboo, yeah, that's a great place to start with his stuff. T-A-B-U, is how you spell the title.
Right, not to be confused with Tom Hardy TV show that existed briefly. Do you remember that? That Chips Hardy worked on?
Oh, yes.
The hat. Yes. Okay.
The hat. It's the hat show.
Yeah, where he was some like famous, was it like a circus guy turned criminal or something?
Sounds right.
But anyway, yeah, that was how I started the festival with Grand Tour. And man, just what a great celebration of filmmaking and just a fun story. You know, he does some really interesting stuff. There's a train derailment that happens, and it's cool how he handles that. It's also very funny. I will say, though, I was looking at you know, what they were drinking in one scene where they're like downing Singapore slings, and I was like, it's like a little too like thin and see-through for Singapore slings. So I'm curious what they were actually drinking. Maybe it was some older Singapore sling recipe or something like that. But anyway, big recommend right out the gate for Miguel Gomez's new one. Up next, a dude that we covered one of his films out of TIFF with, but of course my dude puts out 2 to 3 a year. Of course, we're talking to Traveler's Needs. It's another new one from Hong Sang-soo. And this one has the benefit of starring Isabelle Huppert, which was a very nice surprise. Now, Eric, you did.
I saw it.
I saw it.
Yes, it's all of his movies are a little slower. You have to get into sort of that groove. I didn't like this one as much as like The Novelist's Film, I think it's called.
Yes, from the I remember you liked that one. Yeah.
So, Chris, you really like this one. Why don't you speak on that? What did you really like about this movie?
I mean, I've liked all of. I think this is at least the second, perhaps the third pairing with Sang-soo and Huppert. In Another Country is the one I remember. I feel like there's another one, but I might be wrong on that.
Let me see if I can find it. It's at least definitely the second.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I just like their relationship. Like, she isn't you. Like, you go to a movie with Isabelle Huppert in the lead, and it's usually her movie. Like, nobody uses her well. She's kind of the reason you go see a movie with her in it, unless it's from a big director. And even a lot of big directors, I still don't think do that well with her. I think she kind of overpowers them in a lot of way. He's one who like makes her like match his style, match his way of doing things. And she does it in a very precise, very French way. And it gives these movies, I think, a specific flavor over his normal work. It's not to say better in any way, but they bring out a different kind of taste to him. Whereas like this compared to By the Stream, which is his usual normal actors are in that. There's no big name. His partner, Kim Min-hee, is the lead. But other than that, there's nobody really known. This one, there's someone known. And this is the shorter one. This one's like 73 minutes, I think.
It was a flat 90, actually.
Okay. Oh, flat 90. Jeez, okay.
Yeah.
She plays a French teacher who goes around teaching some people French. She has this relationship with a younger man. And that's the movie.
Yes.
It's actually, I mean, it's interesting, though, because I this one really struck me. And I think because this was the first time I saw him collaborate with an actor I was more familiar with. This, by the way, confirming the third time Isabelle Huppert and Hong Sang-soo have worked together.
What's the third one?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
It's just I looked up the copy for Traveler's Needs says reunites for their third delightful outing. And I think it is a delightful outing. And I think, and maybe this was like story I was building up in my head. And indeed, maybe that's kind of his intention just because there's so little here. But I love the mystery about Isabelle Huppert's character and what brought her to Korea in this moment. And what is it? Like, what is she doing there, right? There's so little information given. And in fact, you know, Eric, you're right that she's teaching French. That seems to be how she is presenting herself to people. Like, oh, yeah, I can teach you French. And the way she's doing it is through, like, writing down, you know, phrases on cards that people are saying in, you know, they're communicating in English. And she says, okay, like, I'll write this in French. And that's how you say it. You know, and I guess sort of this alternate way of learning a language, trying to make it more usefully conversational or whatever. But it's important to note that, like she says in the movie, she's never taught before. She has no actual teaching skills. She's kind of winging it, which is
right. So I guess she's just a bandit or something, just roaming the land, like getting one over on these people. She mostly just gets drunk off this milk alcohol throughout the film, which
yes.
Go for it if you can.
I mean, that is the speciality of Sang-soo. People getting drunk in like very intimate ways, like and that bringing out different sides of their character and very pointed ways. Usually, things that are being repressed due to things that are happening elsewhere in the movie.
And it is, or it's slow. Just, by the way, it's a slow movie.
Very slow.
I don't think
slow.
I think a lot of film people love it. I don't think a lot of general audiences necessarily would. But even at the film festival, a press and industry screening, If you get a little bored during the movie, just look around the theater and count everyone who's asleep.
Yeah.
I think I had 7.
You'll get a couple snorers too. You'll get a couple that really just blare in your ear a couple times.
Everyone who you can clock it, right? It's like you slept through 80% of that movie. And then you'll see them go and turn around and release like a review for it, which I always find funny.
Not us. I was awake.
No, I mean, I was feeling it through all. And I don't know if it was because like it had been a while since I'd seen a Hong Sang-soo movie, because I did not catch any of his output last year. And I missed the films of TIFF. So this was my first in probably like a couple years. And I found it like very, you know, sort of like welcoming me back into a very familiar place.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
I was joking about it with some people online who were like larger fans of his work than I am. And they're getting a little testy about it. But I think that is one of the interesting things about the dude is like, he's reliable in the sense that 95% of his movies are exactly the same. They're sort of, you know, I mean, they're constructed the same way. They're not about the same things. And, you know, he's not like remaking his own work, but it's like a lot of long takes. You probably have like 15 shots in a movie, right? You know, it's like it's a very certain style. And I think, Eric, you're totally right. It's not a general audience's thing. It's the reason why a lot of people don't know him. He hasn't had that crossover sensation that other Korean directors have experienced. So he is not a known name. It's very much a specialized taste. And indeed, that's why Cinema Guild, once again, I mean, I think they've distributed almost every single one of his movies that has come stateside. Cinema Guild has taken up that challenge.
I mean, he's been at the festival too since the mid, like the, since I remember, I think my first one of his was Woman on the Beach back in 2006, 2007.
Great movie.
And he's always just been like the people who really love movies, love this guy. What's interesting is if you do stay with him, there are all these really major differences between all the different movies. Mm-hmm. He is really trying different things, like the way Soderbergh tried. They're the two that I really think of as like really experimental people in this field still, who put out narrative films yearly usually.
Yeah.
He's trying different things, but yes, it is incredibly slow. Nothing big happens. Everything is very becalmed. I don't think he's made like a thrilling movie in his life. Even the ones I love are not that. It's just not his tone. So this was to me, this and By the Stream, which is also at the festival, like as was at TIFF. I still love all these movies because they're about humans and about human stuff. And he knows what conversations to focus on to build a little story, a lot of inner life through goings-ons and very everyday goings-ons, like working for a theater festival or trying to get taught how to speak French and stuff like that. These are very everyday things that nobody really can focus on, but he has the time and clearly the budget to do so.
Yeah, well, you know.
You don't require much
of a budget, which is great. I will say this, his first feature, The Day a Pig Fell into the Well, in 1996. And since then, he has accumulated now 39 director credits.
That's crazy. That's like a Rainer Werner Fassbinder output without the cocaine. And if I guess Xanax or something.
Exactly. Probably. Yeah. Without all the fucking hard drugs. Definitely.
Some soju. Probably that's about it.
Yes. This, they were specifically drinking a rice wine called like Macchiole or something. Something. It's sort of like a pseudo. It can generally be kind of like a pseudo sweet, usually very cloudy kind of rice wine, but tasty stuff, man. That's another thing. You will get pretty thirsty watching his movies. But anyway, yes. So a full-throated recommend in a way that you can give a big recommend to a movie like this. It's a Big recommend from two of us and didn't work for Eric. Something that worked for all three of us, we covered it. Chris only at TIFF, so I did want to cover it here as well because Eric and I totally also had our socks knocked off here. But the new one from Sean Baker, Anora, which is out limited, 1018 from Neon. This is a hell of a picture. Might be my favorite Sean Baker movie now. And I really, really loved Florida Project. But hell yeah, this movie. This is Mikey Madison, who you may know from Scream 5 and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. This is her. I mean, even though, you know, Scream 5 was a huge movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was a huge movie, this is her star-making turn.
Yes, big
in
time.
This movie.
Yeah, this, it's incredible. Like, it's such a kinetic movie, too. It's about a an exotic dancer that ends up sort of like getting eloping with this son of a Russian oligarch. And it's kind of like a One Crazy Night or One Crazy 2 Days. It's just, it is a fantastic movie.
It's what was I sort of saying? It's kind of like Pretty Woman if it was made by the Safdie brothers.
Right. Yeah.
You know, in its own way. Like, it, I mean, also it is such a New York movie and such a like deep Brooklyn, like Russian Brooklyn, New York movie, Coney Island, kind of that area. And man, just like the authenticity. And that's what I love about Sean Baker movies in general. Like, wherever they're set, whether it's like LA with Tangerine, Florida for Florida Project, Texas for Red Rocket, like these communities that he is setting his movies in are so darn legit feeling. Like, it has that almost like docudrama, I dare say, like kind of vibe sometimes. Like, you know, you're going through these clubs out in Brighton Beach and whatever, and like, yep, those are real people there. Odds are there's a lot of like non-actors filling this frame in a really you know, amazing way. But yeah, like over two, I mean, it's a hefty ass movie at almost 220. Kind of felt it a little bit, in my opinion. But like, it is just, yeah, like Eric, you said, the kinetic energy of this movie catapulting you,
yes,
through this adventure.
Just going
really amazing.
Through going through those nightclubs, strip clubs, it's like Russian gangsters, and it's very funny. It is so funny.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, it's legit hysterical. I mean, that's what's, you know, always kind of great. I feel like Florida Project probably has the fewest laughs of movies of his that I've seen, but like, this is just so damn funny, like top to bottom. But then at the same time, it manages to like turn on a dime and smack you in the face with some real hardcore drama. Like, and I think, you know,
and sex.
Oh, and sex. That was a very, very sexy movie, man.
Yeah, thank God for that.
Very, very sexy, very legit feeling in that environment also. But yeah, just like this trip that you take, you know, Mikey Madison just carries this whole thing. I mean, not to knock the supporting characters either, because like every single person in this movie turns in like a really memorable supporting role, whether it's like this oligarch kid, the are they Albanian gangsters? Georgian, I think, maybe?
Armenian, I think.
Armenian.
The handler. Yeah. The main handler is incredible. Like, the trio of handlers are great, but the eldest one, the guy who has to leave the religious ceremony to deal with this, is he's been in a few of Baker's movies now, and he really like makes a stamp on this one. He is so fucking funny in this movie.
Karen Karagulian, I'm mispronouncing it, plays Tauros. Very, very
Tauros.
Incredible. Yes. Fucking incredible in this movie.
They actually had a really great photo from the premiere of the movie where it was Mikey Madison in between Tauros and the bearded guy.
The character, I think.
Yes, and they had a good, like, she's in between, and everybody's looking pissed off in the photo, and then, like, the very next photo, it's like, and that's acting. We all love each other. Like, it's so great, but man, yeah, like, just like that dude Tauros, like I have seen that guy making business calls outside of diners.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, just carrying that realism with him. Like, just bravo, whoever he had doing casting with him for this movie. because hot he diggity damn.
He is always, I mean, Baker with the casting has always been a slam dunk. The guy's just good at this shit. I kind of hope, like, if you get him to take up the Sufjan Stevens project and just do states throughout the country and do a movie by state, I would be very happy with that. If it just this happens to be how he unfurls, because like this is the greatest like Russian New York movie since Two Lovers. Like is another fantastic movie. But like it has that flavor of it. It has that very particular custom, like a traditional stuff going on in it. Like it has attention to those things that is blasted apart by modernism, which is the relationship between Mikey Madison and the young Russian boy, who is he's also, I forget his name as well, but he is fucking hilarious as well.
Oh, the kid, yeah, he's played by a guy named Mark Edelstein.
He's been around for
Mark Edelstein plays Ivan. Yeah. Want to just make a note in the comments here. By the way, thanks everybody for tuning in. Didn't mention that at the front, but it's great to see everybody tuning in as we're at the regularly scheduled time for OSL. But the authorized podcast, Johnny Pomato, who's been checking out stuff at the festival, says Mikey Madison outstanding, but he feels Karen Karuglian, who plays Toro, steals the show, who's sitting in front of Johnny at the public screening he was at. His wife kissed him every time he got a big laugh, which I think is fucking fantastic.
What a sweet little story. I wish I had that instead of the bathroom guy.
Johnny Pomato, man, watching some sweet PDA. You had a dude shitting his pants in a urinal. That's that's nice, not very even. Fair.
At least it wasn't me this time.
That's true. But yeah, y'all, 1018 limited from Neon. I really hope for an expansion here. I really hope this movie hits with the limited release and can expand, because also, I mean, it's so goddamn gorgeous. And thinking again on like the kinetic feeling of it, just watching it in a theater, just mandatory viewing experience, you know, for sure. Now, take a quick break here to, like I promised, we're going to plug some stuff. We do have, folks, our end of year shows coming up here. And first up, pretty crazy. This is like tomorrow's October 1st. It's going to be here before you know it. But 1023, our final worldwide digital experience of the year, we're talking Scream 4. On the internet, if you can even believe that. Very excited for this.
And I remember I went back to Scream 4 a few years ago and I was kind of pleasantly surprised by it. So don't expect pure negativity, just a good little layer of it.
No, we are. Look, this is a Scream head household, folks. You know, we all like, I would wager a good chunk of the franchise. So, you know, it's not going to be a hate fest. It's going to be more an all encompassing, probably, conversation in one way or another. But yeah, I remember liking this one pretty okay too. I did see it in theaters. The ending, incredibly goof-tacular moment, which I laugh at every time. We'll talk about that at length. But yes, 10:23, 9 p.m. Eastern, we will be doing the Q&A after party as well. Patreon supporters at the $8 and $10 level get to bundle that in for free, which is pretty cool.
And that's and you know, if you haven't done one of these before, we do. It's like you see us do this whole show, the entire episode live, and then afterwards we hang out for about an hour, BSing, you know, showing off our cool pipes,
many cool pipes, cool t-shirts, our drink that we've made. Also, we answer your questions if you have any questions.
Most importantly, and we also discuss all the props used in the production. So get ready for that.
But yeah, that is the last digital show of the year, and that's worldwide. That is 14 day after you know, the event. You can get the replay, all that good stuff. And then, starting in November, we have our three final In the Flesh dates. I just want to show off the full poster first. Our boy, our artist, man, Philippe Sobreau, another fucking banger.
Love this.
Just love this fucking thing. We will have this, of course, for sale in the merch store. But yeah, just to break out those three dates. First up, 11:15. It's a Friday night. We are making our gosh darn debut in Seattle, Washington. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about Harry and the Hendersons at Washington Hall. This is something I've not seen in a while. I remember it being incredibly stupid, yet Man, I'm tearing up right now thinking about it. When he's kicking that fucking Sasquatch out of his house, man, it is heartbreaking.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And there, I think he's at one point wearing a Seattle Seahawks sweatshirt. So that's exciting for all of our local Seattle people. Please come out. Don't let us get bumped by a true crime podcast or anything like that, because you guys love that stuff more than anything up in Seattle. But
well, dude, it's the Pacific Northwest, man. They got a lot of fucking serial killers.
It's a Laura Palmer a day up there.
So, yeah, exactly.
They do
support comedy for a change instead of grisly murder. Okay.
Speaking of grisly murder, we're heading down to Portland two nights later to talk about what may be, you know, some may say, a lot of people are saying it, the ground zero for cinematic disgusting shitboys. We're going to give a convo all about the Goonies.
Look at that. A face a mother even couldn't love.
No, yeah, I think Chunk was orphaned after the events of the film.
Yes. Might have been. Might have been.
No, this is a movie that we understand. It has a very large, passionate following. And, you know, it's one of those things where none of us really grew up on it, oddly. I don't know how four dudes of our age.
I saw it a bit growing up.
I grew up on it. I still think it sucks. But
that's what I mean. Like, did it fall into it? Yeah, exactly.
Sure, yes.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a sacred cow, but we're going to make hamburger. So come on out and watch that. No, I mean, that's the thing. It's okay to like a movie. That's what we always say on this show. And it's totally fine if you like it. We're just going to have, we're going to make a little jokes about the disgusting shitboy's tummy.
Yeah, and the truffle shuffle, et cetera.
Pirate treasure.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot to talk about. A lot of fun is going to happen at that show.
Pirate. I'm very stoked, by the way, to be going back to Mississippi Studios, great club in Portland that we played several years ago. Mm-hmm. And there is a shot, folks, that if this sells out quick enough, they'll let us add a late show, in which case we have a very, very interesting idea, something we have not done on the road yet.
Something we have never done before, perhaps would be a second show. But Portland, I guess you don't want it. I guess. Okay. All right. And by the way, feel free to bundle these. If I see you at Seattle and I see you at Portland, you get to tug those clamps twice.
I think we really should have the tier correct before we start selling the tugger level. I think we need to have the discussion before we sell things for it.
It's,
you know,
it's VIP meet and greet. Sure. And if I like you, that's okay, the next level.
There you go. Okay.
I got to approve. There's going to be a velvet rope.
For the TVs.
Mm-hmm. VIP meet and tweak.
Yeah, it's going to be like a Nora in there. So come on out.
Oh, my God. And then several weeks after that, we return to the East Coast. We're going back up to Boston. We will be back in Last Boston, great club that we've played several times over the years now. Talking Pretty Woman, which, you know, that's another movie that a lot of... parents like
I like it. I think Julia Roberts is, this is probably one of her best roles. It's
she's great in
energetic
it.
And it's so fun. Yeah,
movie sucks terribly, but yeah, she's fantastic in it. And also
sacred cow, we can,
no, it's not a sacred cow, it's a sacred chicken, if anything. It's
sacred chicken.
We will, though, promise that Steven Sadek will be singing the entirety of King of Wishful Thinking, of course, the theme from Pretty
Woman.
True.
Yes,
that's
true. At this show, he will be doing that, and we will be leaving the stage for that performance for him to do a special spotlight.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just solo on stage singing that tune.
And, of course, that movie has pushy, handsy, evil Jason Alexander, so there's a lot to talk about.
Evil Costanza. I don't like him.
Where was he more evil, here or as the shitty boss in Blank Man?
Much more evil here. And Pretty Woman. Much more evil.
Okay.
Actually, I just rewatched Blank Man because I go through the classics, you know. And he's good in that movie as the shitty boss. It's like J. Jonah Jameson he's doing, which is fun.
It's like J. Jonah Jameson meets Lieutenant Dan from Forrest Gump.
That's right. Yeah.
And this, I think also Pretty Woman was around the Jason Alexander song and dance McDLT commercial days.
I think it was probably right after that or right around that.
So that's like the prime, that's like Alexander prime, like full head of hair still. He's rocking and rolling in that movie. Yeah. It's going to be a good time.
If you haven't seen that McDLT commercial, look it up. It's worth your time.
That might have to work its way into the intro video.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah, we'll just play some commercials for the folks before we get started. I would love that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so all ticketing information, head over to our website, whmpodcast.com. It's all on our tour page, all four shows, tickets for sale. We hope to see you out there. Now, continuing on, we have three more things to talk about here. One, I'm just going to do really quickly here, but something from the Restorations part of the festival, which is something I love about any film festival that does a restoration section. I think it's brilliant. NYFF always has a real hearty one. And this year, fellas, there was one. It was just going right after my own heart. There was a restoration of Hellraiser playing at the New York Film Festival.
Oh, God, that's what it looks like under my shirt.
I was going to say, that's what it looks like when people are bringing fucking soup into the theater. yeah, no, this is the 1980s Clive Barker classic. I did stick around last Monday for a screening of the new restoration that Arrow Films did. It's awesome, you guys. It's fucking great. I had never seen, I think, any Hellraiser movie on a big screen. It was really awesome to watch this with a crowd. Yeah, no, man. I mean, so many of them fucking just started going to video.
IFC did three on the big screen on an old print like years and years ago. And
that okay.
It looked so fucking good. That's what made me really want to push it when we actually did it. But I was so excited. They do have a great lineup. I also wanted to highlight Compensation is another one they did that was really good. I saw it years ago, but they've done a whole new cleanup on it. I think Janice had something to do with that. It's fantastic. And I've loved every year they've done this. I think like the first year I did this, they did the Max Ophuls. They did like three of his, and that's what got me into his stuff. So anytime you can hit the revival section, I really, really think you should.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Yeah, no, definitely take a look. See if there's actually, I'll plug it right now. October 5th, they have a screening going at 9:15 at Lincoln Center if you're here in New York for the festival. And October 9th, they're doing one at 1 p.m. Let me tell you, I mean, Hellraiser, see it when you can see it, I guess, but not really a movie to watch when the sun's out.
No, I like 1 p.m. Okay. I like, because then I can go out to dinner and I'm home by 8, I'm asleep.
I just mean the content of this movie is such that like it's kind of hard to vibe on a sunny afternoon is all.
Well, it might be dreary that day. We don't know.
Oh, hope for a cloudy day. it looks great. And I got to say, there is a moment I was watching this with our bud Sean Weiner as well. He'd never actually seen it before.
Wow.
He said he suspected that if he had, it was back in the purchase days and he was like super wasted. He didn't remember any of it. And there was actually a large group of people because I think someone sort of did a cursory like to their own group, like who hasn't seen this before, and it was a group of like at least 8 or 9 dudes, and a bunch of them were like, no, I haven't seen it before. So one, pretty great. Two, well-behaved repertory audience, not something you get a lot here in New York.
That's true. People love giggling,
chittering and tittering and whatnot for things that may be a little like dated or hokey or whatever. There's goof-tacular shit in Hellraiser, of course, so like laughing was happening when laughing was appropriate, but overall really well behaved. But something I'd never noticed before, and this is a movie I've seen probably at least like 5 or 6 times, Andrew Robinson and his the wife there, when they move into the house and they've like I guess loosely decorated it, they have a framed poster of a photograph of the Twin Towers. And I guess like, they're from New York. He has all these lines in the movie about like, well, this shitty house is still better than Brooklyn. That kind of shit, right? So I guess that's their New York memory that they took.
Are you suggesting Pinhead saw that and then decided to take a flight?
Well, here's what's just weird about watching it now is so that's very prominent in their stairwell in this movie. The end of the movie, and this doesn't really spoil anything, but like the house catches on fire and is burning to the ground for reasons. And you see this fucking poster, and indeed the Twin Towers inside the poster crashing down in flames right front. And I was like, that's weird. And because I'm seeing it so big, I'm actually noticing it happen on the screen. I've never seen it on DVD before. Very weird.
We've never asked the question before, where was Clive Barker on that sacred day?
That's true.
What did he know? When did he know it?
Exactly.
We don't know. These questions have never been asked.
I mean, Hellraiser teleportation stuff. Is that how those cutters got into those seat rests? We'll never know.
That's true. Philippe Sobrero comments, Cenobites can't melt steel beams, which, yeah, I believe that too.
That's right. The Hellraisers are committing mass terrorism acts. Everybody wants to tell you that solving the lament configuration is impossible. I'm here to tell you, someone who had a 3-hour conversation with Pinhead the Cenobite last night, it's solvable, folks. Well, it is solvable.
We have Butterball here. He's going to be speaking a little bit about how he has been persecuted during this time and how he has been taking the fault for people that are not part of the Cenobites.
Oh my God. And now Kanye West is dressing like one of these Cenobites now, right?
That does seem to be what his final form will be, is to be sticking pins all over his head and then talking normal about his Rubik's Cube.
Yeah. Well,
and so how is he turning that around into flagrant anti-Semitism?
Well, that's just a natural outgrowth of Kanye West. Like, that's not he doesn't have to do anything to create that. That's just natural. That just comes out of him.
Yeah, no, well, honestly, it's not the first time you've seen Cenobites just wandering around Hollywood. I think we got a file photo right here of a Cenobite walking around Hollywood.
Terrifying.
I thought it was a Cenobite. It was just Kristen Stewart's father again.
Oh my God. By the way, if you're listening to this on audio, definitely check out YouTube, our channel, We Hate Movies, there. Because they won't show you that on regular television. That was too scary.
Not even Alex Jones. Not even Alex Jones will show that to you. He knows it's too spicy.
Oh, wait, this is really funny. Hey, hang on a second. Where was it? There was a good comment here. Oh, here we go. Knowledge Junkie says Kanye's Cenobite name would be Skinhead.
Yeah. No, that's about right.
That's kind of funny. This is a restoration that I think you're going to get to see in this new Arrow Films quadrilogy 4K and Blu-ray set that's coming out. They're calling it a quartet of torment. But I spelled that wrong.
Very smart to put to only do it with the four that matter. That's very smart. I my hat's off to, I already pre-ordered this one. Arrow, very smart move, I say.
Hell yeah. No, I got the pre-order going down too. Stick with the ones that were theatrically released.
I know Henry Cavill was in one. Stop.
I think that's the one. I think he's in the one that's also with Lance Henriksen. It's like
I think it's the sixth one.
Oh, it's so that's not the video game one then? Hell World or whatever? Maybe.
Oh, I think it might be, actually.
So you know what? Fifth.
Bring him back. Henry can play Big Bite.
I like that guy.
It's Big Bite, you know, and he's raising hell.
Damn you, Big Bite. I was always promised that there would never be a Cenobite more handsome than I, Pinhead.
Just make it sound like this is part of that Warhammer shit he's obsessed with.
Yeah, sure.
And then you'll get him. You just be like, no, the Cenobites are a part of the league that is going against the Warhammer guys in the big suits.
Yeah.
They're a different type, but it would be part of that universe. And
they look like kissing cousins, those Warhammer guys and Cenobites.
Some of the guys inside the machines, they do look a little bit like Cenobites.
Mm-hmm.
We'll move right along. But yeah, 10/22, that set comes out. We got it pre-ordered here. Fuck yeah. Something that's out now in current release, but we're including it here because, we haven't done any current release stuff in a while, of course. Someone was like, not counting TIFF. It's been 2 months since they did an OSL. And I was like, well, one, count the TIFF shows. Yeah. And two, we already told you we were taking August off. But indeed, here's a movie that's out right now. And it did have a special IMAX event that was part of the festival. I haven't had a chance to see it yet. I feel like Steve and I will rap about it when OSL proper comes back later on this month. But in the meantime, the two of you, Have it out. Tell us what you thought all about Francis Ford Coppola's Megalopolis.
Want to say, yes, even though Chris and I did ultimately like it, some people think of, the We Ate Movies guys like this or they didn't like that. We are not a monolith voting block. Steve saw it. He disliked it very much. So you like that? So Chris and I actually liked it. Steve did not like it. Underline so that you realize that we're different people. I know it's confusing sometimes, but.
And I don't know if I like it or not because I haven't seen it yet.
So, Chris, do you want to kick off with what this is about? And
I mean, what? How do you even? I mean, it's a grand tale of power, a fable, as he has as big Frankie Cope has said it. It's it's about Caesar Catalina versus what is Gus's name? Giancarlo Esposito's character's name? The mayor.
Right,
the mayor.
Cicero. Mayor Cicero.
The mayor, yes.
So they're using all these actual kind of Roman names. A lot of the movie is Francis Ford Coppola equating the fall of America, which we are in, with the fall of Rome.
Yes.
And it really works well, in my opinion. I think the imagery and stuff really works well. There's going to be so much to unpack in years to come with this movie that I think people are just having this immediate visceral reaction to it because it's not about, usually movies are like, that guy's got a bomb and I need to stop him, like cut the green wire. But that,
you know where the story's going and the steps you have to take
exactly together. But this is more about this is just a long experimental fable, like we said, about like Caesar's, like he represents like creation, and Claudio Shia LaBeouf is like destruction and the back and forth between that, the family drama and the ruling families, like inner court politics. I found it very fascinating, but I understand that it is not for everyone. And I've noticed once I tweeted that it was good, people got it upset. It is
very much not normal. It is just a weird movie. I think it's just easy to say that. It's a weird fucking movie. I love that about it. I think what's interesting about it is that he's using a lot of the weird like quotations of Shakespeare that go on for a little longer than they should. All those things, to me, it speaks of a man who's still obsessed with silent movie filmmaking and like montage.
Oh,
and all,
that's interesting.
What all this looks to me like is stuff that he took directly from his memories of silent film and tried to put it with the most technology he had at this time.
Obviously, so, Metropolis vibes all over.
Oh, I mean, everywhere, fucking everywhere. That that one is huge, but also like Sunrise, any of the big epics of the time. It really does feel baked into not only the weirdness of this movie, but also like the storytelling apparatus. It's big, it's bold, and it feels like it's from a different era, but it's being used with all the modern stars of today. It's being used with computer effects from today that I don't think would work with the old effect. I mean, maybe they would. It would be interesting to see what he would do. But like the statues moving and all that stuff, it is very effective to me. Like there's a shot of a hand grabbing the moon that's really intoxicating. Right. There's all these very weird images that are created, yes, through the same cheap is the wrong word, but like early CGI methods. Like it does feel... People have likened this to the prequels. I see what they mean in the certain effects use, like the way that exteriors are used, like big buildings look like they are from the Star Wars universe in a lot of these shots. But storytelling wise, I think he's going for something much bigger than Lucas was.
Yeah.
And I like all the performances. I think they're all crazy, but I think they're fitting what he's trying to do, which is that ecstatic performance level that you would get with silent movies, like these people who look like they're losing their fucking minds on the and like that's what he's doing, but he's adding the sound component, he's adding all those things that weren't there to create this new language, and the language is weird. It's a weird thing to fucking look at, it's a weird thing to hear, but I think he's looking forward to something that, I mean, everybody said it, postmodern is, it is, it, like whether he's doing that on purpose or not, that's the tone, that's where he is right now. And like people have likened it to Southland Tales, which makes no sense to me.
You know what it reminds me of a little bit, and I think this is also the divisiveness of it, reminded me a bit of Mother, the Darren Aronofsky movie.
I can see that.
which I also really liked. And I know a lot of people didn't. I just think this is a very interesting and rich text. I think people will be unpacking it for years to come. And I think, yeah, maybe some of the effects look cheesy and some of the performances are like bombastic, like big, like, yes. You know, you got Shia LaBeouf farting around, maybe too much. Aubrey Plaza, I think, is good in it. I think John Voight, I think, is excellent in this movie. And I don't often get to say that.
No, that's a rare thing.
It also doesn't mean you fucking agree with his politics. You just think he turned in a good performance in a movie.
Yeah, he turned in a good performance in this movie. Now push him into the meat grinder. I don't care about him.
Someone in the chat, John Corrick, chimes in and asks, did you guys see it with the live action reporter scene?
No, I did not. Yeah, I was gonna you didn't, I didn't, we weren't at the same screening, but I believe that is chopped out of the massive released version.
The scene where it's the little square of Caesar answering the questions, that's where it would be, Eric.
Right, okay, yeah. I saw people going crazy online for it, and no, it did not happen in my showing in beautiful Poughkeepsie, New York.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, I think, Chris, with the Southland Tales thing, you know, again, without having seen this movie, but thinking about my own history with Southland Tales, I think it's possible what some people just might be acknowledging is that it's a big, bombastic movie that we might not quite yet understand.
Yes, it's weird.
Oh, yeah, it is weird, but like, if you're expecting that kind of story, it's not like, it is not even kind of like that.
That's what I'm saying, is just to like maybe try to like clarify, because I've seen a ton of that too, just relating to Southland Tales. Yes. And I think it is more like, wow, this is a big ass movie with a lot of like big ass ideas. And, you know, we might not, you know, like, I guess you guys aren't ready for that yet, but your kids are going to love it. Like kind of attitude, possibly, you know, because like, I feel like this movie was destined to be the most divisive movie of the year before it was like, you know, before a trailer had even been seen. And I feel like all the stuff with the disastrous AI ad campaign thing, you know, sort of put another sort of set of eyes on it in a way. I can see the Southland Tales thing. I mean, I just hope that it doesn't take me 20 years to understand this movie. I'm excited for it because I respond well to big, weird and confusing. So, you know, and I think, Eric, it's interesting too, your point about Mother. That was another big, interesting, confusing movie that also didn't particularly work for me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's another thing that people were sort of ready to feel one way or another about, like, from the jump. I just think it's kind of interesting whenever we get these kinds of movies that you wouldn't necessarily think of as an event movie in that way. But in a way, it kind of is. Like, everybody is ready to talk about this movie, I think, possibly regardless of having seen it, which is a mistake.
That's part of the draw, because it is weird. Like, the Southland Tales thing, like, Southland Tales, this, Mother, we should be happy these movies are hitting theaters, even if we don't love them. Like, this is probably not a movie I'm going to watch often. It took me a while to get dialed in, too. So I feel like if you get over that first hour and embrace what it's doing, I think you will find it to be a rewarding experience, but, you know, your results might vary.
I even think the first hour is great. I really do think it's just one of those things where you have to give him your attention. You can't be running on rails on this one. You can't be half checking your phone, stuff like that. It requires your attention. And like, if you don't want to give it to it, that's fine. And I think a lot of, you know, there's people who are genuine, like film people who don't like this movie, who think it's, you know, just a little self-obsessed, a little, you know, arrogant, a little overdone. And that's all fine and well. A lot of the box office idiots, they just don't know how to talk about this movie if they're not talking about numbers. Like, I hate any discussion about that kind of stuff with these kinds of movies, because like, very clearly, that's not his end goal. Like, that his thing was like, I'm going to make $1 billion. Like, of course he's not going to make $1 billion. No, are you out of your mind?
He didn't put Spider-Man in it for a reason. Okay?
Yes. Fine.
And to that point, yes, it was, you know, released on over 1,300 screens, or what was that number? Let's make sure I get this right here. It was released on over 1,800 screens, 1,854. Oh. Yes, it came in sixth and grossed $4 million. But if you are looking at this movie in terms of that, I mean, that's just wrong.
Yeah, I don't know what you're doing.
It's not the way to look at a movie like this. It's not designed to make movie. It's not designed to make money. What Francis Ford Coppola movie has been in the last like 30 years? What was the last one? Dracula?
You're even trying to look at the box off? Even Jack was not Jack, really yeah. him trying to make money. It was him being weird, and he was being weird and in a family movie way, which right. is off-putting in double. But like,
yeah,
this is like, I get why people are turned off by this, because he's doing all these things. It's not a normal movie. It's not working or running like a normal movie. Right. It's very aggressive in its way.
Right. Yes. And remember, Steve disliked it. So
yes,
remember, and for all we know, Andrew might not respond to it either.
Also.
So half of us enjoyed it. Your results might vary. I know people, again, when you say, oh, we hate movies like this. No, they didn't. No, they didn't.
That's right.
Someone on there might have.
One of us has. That's yeah, right. Maybe one of us has.
Our buddy Busiris makes a good point. They say, I love these movies that get people talking constructively and friendly anyways. Yes, and that's, I think, very important here. When we get these kind of divisive titles, don't let the emotion, you know, carry right. you away or whatever. Like, don't be nasty to someone if they liked the right. movie.
We're changing right? the rhetoric. We're tempering the mood. I, the thing is, it's art. You know, this is like this is a $120 million art movie, for better or worse.
Right.
And art, a good art provokes a reaction and conversation. So even you saying it reminds you of Neil Breen is you actually engaging with the art and talking about it. And that is also fair.
Absolutely. We're at the top of the hour. We have one more to get through, so I do want to get off this really quickly. But I think Philippe asked a question that I'm kind of asking myself here. What do the two of you think about the possibilities of a Megalopolis mentality?
It's not happening.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
No, absolutely
no way we can do this. No.
Yeah. I was going to say maybe, but
no.
Just because of like the scope of it all, Chris.
A hundred different reasons. Like it's not a story. There's not a lot of stuff to pluck out of it. Like in that way,
That's just fair, like
there's like he's quoting things a lot. The images as well as the words are being like it's a real there's a collage element to it even like.
Right.
I don't know if we could do that, but you know, if people want to try it, I'll try it. But I think it's worth just see it.
The only thing I will say about the business that it did and why it's important for one reason, and it's not even a huge reason, but thinking about both in terms of the business that it did and the release calendar, if you're someone who has this movie out in your area on IMAX, and that's
Good
really
note.
How you're dying to see it. You have to see it this week because on Friday, Joker Folie à Deux comes out.
No, I'm sorry, you had it right. It's Jokey.
Jokey
Folie à Deux. That's what it's being called. It's Jokey.
Jokey Deuce comes out, and Jokey Deuce gonna be taking your IMAX screen. So if that's a big thing to you, you know, this movie, all this to say that it had it done BAFO box office, they would have made some exceptions. Maybe here's a Showtime here or there. I would strongly encourage you to see it in IMAX because there's a very real chance it'll be not out of theaters entirely, just off of IMAX screens because Jokey's coming in.
Jokey's going to be on a lot of screens. You're going to see Jokey Deuce on all kinds of screens.
Can't escape Jokey these days.
So Jokey Deuce will be everywhere.
So here we go. The last film we'll talk about on this episode. And by the way, make sure to tune in next Monday at noon Eastern also when we're going to be doing the second part of our NYFF coverage. But for now, closing out things with something I thought was just quite an awe-striking experience here. But the new one from Ramel Ross, Nickel Boys is the name of the film, and this was the opening night selection for the festival. The opening night was just this past Friday night. And this one's out in limited release later in October, 10/25, from Orion and Amazon MGM, God. Which is disgusting to say. But
that is disgusting. Like, it is nice to know that Orion is still putting out the big movies. Like, they're still, the name is still on some of the bigger movies of the age. It is right. Nice to know that.
Yes. But I'll say right now.
Yeah.
Probably the best movie of the year. I doubt I will see a better movie this year than this.
There you go. Yeah, this, if you're unfamiliar, if the title's not ringing a bell, this is an adaptation of the 2019 Colson Whitehead book of the same name. It's about two young black boys in the 60s who are sent to a home for bad boys. It's basically just a fucking corporal punishment factory,
right, like a juvenile hall. That
This is in Jim Crow era Florida is where we're here, and just to get it out of the way now, I think, like, just from stuff I've been seeing on Letterboxd, you can either get behind with how this movie presents itself or you can't, and if you cannot, this movie will not work for you. Chris Cabin, do you want to elaborate?
Well, so it depends a lot. If you've also seen his first film, Hell County, this morning, this evening, which is a very distinct looking movie. It's a documentary, mostly.
Yep.
It is a really unique looking one. It is one that its visuals kind of, in a lot of ways, outweigh what it's actually talking about. Although I would say it reflects it in a lot of very smart ways. This is similar in that all of it, if not most of it, is told in POV.
Yeah.
My joke to my friend when I left it was like, this lays the groundwork for the Peep Show movie. It's the last thing you should take from it, but this doesn't. Yes. This shows us the way to do it.
I was thinking about Peep Show kind of all throughout the movie, and I know I shouldn't have been, and I was thinking about other things as well, because
my joke brain had to say something, but I have to let him talk every once in a while.
And got a regular jokey over here. But I think I'm surprised that people are having issues with the way the film presents itself, with those POV, like you're living through the character. And I think that's a huge part of the point, you know, as a 40-year-old white man, like, you are put into their shoes, and I think it is incredibly effective, and I'm surprised that people just are discounting this film just because of that style. If anything, we need more style in movies, and maybe that's why I also like Megalopolis, but I just think this is a home run, and I think the acting is impeccable. I really loved everything about this movie.
It's a big stylistic gambit, and I think it works very well for what the movie is trying to get across. And, like, a lot of ways, like, a version of this, like, the fact that we see the kids, there's this one shot of the kids picking oranges, and they're clearly doing labor for, like, either for someone or for the, at the very least, for the government. They're doing that. That would be turned into a thing of a political meeting before you could actually settle into the image in another movie. Like, oh yeah, we just, we don't pay him nothing. And, like, just talking about how, like, it's, but when you're in the movie and you just see him walking through this, and you get, like, what the sense of just working there was, it wasn't the politics of it aren't bludgeoning you over the head right as soon as you see it. They're giving you some time to actually soak in it. And then eventually it's a roaring emotional movie. Like, the feeling at the end of it is so huge. And I mean, like, I'm not going to talk about the twist much, but, like, there were scenes where I was like, wait a minute, including the bar scene, which is fantastic.
Right. Absolutely. And there's also a lot of cutaways and references to the movie, The Defiant Ones. With Tony Curtis. Yeah. And Poitier. An excellent movie. If you haven't seen 1958's The Defiant Ones, I really recommend that as well.
Worthwhile.
And just talking again, I mean, because you can't talk about this movie without talking about how it's shot. Just credit where credit's due. It was shot by Jomo Frey, who, right away when this movie started, I was like, oh, of course Jomo shot this. They also shot All Dirt Roads, Taste of Salt from last year. It was also in New York Film Festival. And that was another movie that just knocked me on my ass. And I think in both situations, what's interesting, and Nickel Boys specifically, you know, because of like the setting that we're in, right? We're at this juvenile detention center where corporal punishment against, you know, the black boys is clearly happening, and the white boys in their own separate place, probably not as much, although probably, you know, happening in its own way. But you can see, again, Chris, to your point about like in another movie, how would something function? And one thing that I really applaud this movie for is thinking sort of, you know, critically and artistically about how can we show what this was like? Because this, of course, it's based on the Colson Whitehead book is fiction, but it's based on a real event, and also in Florida. And oftentimes, you know, these movies we love, you know, it's almost as if like the only way you can show black suffering is through like gruesome, graphic fucking scene after scene. And as if that's the only way you can communicate what's going on. And this movie gets around that by just orchestrating and informing you about these acts differently. You know, you know what's going on. You're not missing anything. But at the same time, the viewer is not subjected to just scene after scene of fucking brutality and whatever. It's a much more subtle approach to telling a story about those conditions and that part of our history. It's just fan-fucking-tastic. And I have to say, it's kind of bonk to me that this is with a fucking mainly streaming service now. Like,
right. Oh, really?
You know what? It's fucking MGM Amazon. Yeah, shit. Like, okay. That's, you know, I feel like because in their own cynical way, right, they'll put this in theaters because it's like possibly an Oscar contender.
Yes.
Or an awards contender in some way, you know.
Best supporting actress, it better fucking be.
Ingenue Ellis Taylor as the mother in this movie. She is just fabulous. And seeing her turn from Justified City Primeval to this, like, just what a talent, man. What an absolute talent she is. And the two guys playing the teen age of the two boys, Elwood and other kid's name?
Turner.
Yes, Elwood and Turner. Yeah, so Ethan Harise plays Elwood and Brandon Wilson plays Turner. These guys are fucking fantastic.
They are really good.
I mean, they're who you're looking at mainly this whole time, and so you're with them through a lot of the movie. Hot damn, just two great performances. Like we said, Ingenue Ellis Taylor, also great. And then, you know, what you get of him too, Hamish, dude. Hamish Linklater as like the guy running this piece of shit school. Just terrifying performance.
Yes, and I'm just looking now online, it says that there's going to be a limited theatrical release on October 25th of this
Amazon
year.
So go for it. For the big ones, like I remember they handled Manchester by the Sea, and I remember they put it in a good amount of theaters.
Well, they hired out Roadside Attractions to do that.
I don't know if they're doing, I guess they're doing that with these guys now then.
I don't know, because basically MGM is now owned by Amazon. That's what that is. And Orion, you know, helped produce this movie, but they're not in a position to really distribute. So it's up to Amazon. Amazon does have people that do theatrical bookings. It's just whether or not they want to fucking do that for this movie.
You got to push.
And they should.
You got to push this movie. And I think this movie deserves to be in awards consideration in a major way.
I think absolutely. It will. I don't think it'll take the acting stuff, but all technical stuff, like Alex Summers and Scott Ilario's score is really freaking good. Speaking of like the, like not letting you know what emotions to feel, it's more music responding to the world of the movie, like the clangs of things, the way you pick stuff, like those kinds of noises burnt into a kind of music rather than being like, this is what you should be feeling now. And like,
it lets you
live in the world as the images are trying to allow you to do as well.
I'll be shocked if there's no Best Picture nom. I'll say that.
That'd be crazy. I would say that would be fucking nuts.
I think it's got a chance to win too.
You know, so it's fascinating. We have now in this year, two documentarians making feature narrative debuts. because Ramel, I mean, this is his narrative feature debut. He's only directed a couple of shorts and then Hale County This Morning, This Evening from 2018, which is a fabulous film.
Unbelievable.
And then you have Josh Oppenheimer doing the same thing. But Chris, as you reported out of TIFF, it sounds like Ramel is kind of more successful.
Way more in his... naturally adept at this. Immediately set off running with this thing. And like, yeah, I Oppenheimer definitely has a bit of a struggle with the end.
Yeah, yeah. So just rave. That's one I think, you know, it's probably okay to say We Hate Movies says they liked it. I have a feeling Steve will probably like this too. Like, but you know, 3 out of 4 guys already really you know, had a
we outweigh him at this point. It doesn't even matter what Steve thinks. We outweigh him, right. And that
pound for pound.
We hate movies. Yeah. Likes this movie.
So shout out to Steve. We are physically bigger than him. We do literally outweigh him. You're also. but that is going to do it for this episode of OSL. We ran long. Thanks for sticking with us. If you got the audio only version, thanks for checking that out as well. Again, next Monday, our second and final bit of coverage from the New York Film Festival's 62nd year will happen then. Big week in the WHMU, just real quick. Tomorrow, the Spooktacular kicks off. Four-roar movies is the theme this month. Kicking things off tomorrow with A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream, which one is this? Master?
Yes, yeah, Master. I mean, yeah.
It's the Dream Master. And then big week for the big franchises on We Love Movies over on Patreon. We are talking Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers.
Ooh, these are these episodes, we recorded them already. They're coming out. I'm so excited. It's fun to get back into the sandbox you all know and love of Freddy Krueger and Michael Myers. We have a blast with these episodes.
And then Friday, of course, it'll be the second episode of the second season of Too Old for This Shit dropping, where we're talking all about the Penguin, the new Max series, just a big hell yeah all around for that. That's something We Hate Movies says is good. Yes, so there you go. But that's it for now. Have a great week. Enjoy all the shows. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week on OSL. Until then, I've been Andrew Jupin.
Eric Siska.
Chris Cabin.
Adios, folks. Bye-bye.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.